Good evening, readers and listeners. Tonight we have a poet on board. His name is Rodney Hickman, and he's published 7 volumes of poetry. Now, Rod's originally from Taree in New South Wales, Australia, which accounts for his Aussie accent. Welcome, Rodney.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Great. So, would you like to share some of your poetry with the listeners?
Yeah, I will. I'll read some poems, and they're all a bit different. And this first one I'll read to you actually happened to me when I was on a date with my wife.
Oh, okay.
It's called The Dinner Date. Well, a romantic dinner at a restaurant is where we went to dine. The place was very famous and its food was very fine. Each table had a lamp which hung down very low. All the lights were dim and the music was real slow. I guess this was the place where lovers like to be. The musicians were very good and the show was great to see. But now, unfortunately, my plans didn't work out like they could. There was a funny incident. Picture it, you should. As I stood up at the table to reach a bit more bread, the lampshade hanging down was now sitting on my head. I didn't notice it as I was talking to my wife. But all those in the restaurant were now laughing at my strife. I tried to dislodge it, but it stuck on like a hat, and with the smell of burning hair, I start to panic like a cat. I finally pulled that light and got it off my head. Gee, I feel like a goose were the only words I said. Then we all collected ourselves and we finally ate our dinner. I had no choice but to smile and try to be a grinner. Now, after eating tea, my wife let out a belch real loud, like a foghorn on a cruise ship. It startled all that crowd. Another diner said, "You're very rude, and really that's a crime." And then he added, "How dare your wife burp in front of mine?" I apologised to them and said I did not know it was her turn. I guess when all is said and done, we still had much to learn.
Good one. Right, have you got another one there? I want to hear more.
Okay. I had a friend who... she's a blonde, and she didn't know much about a car. And she was telling me, she said, "I hope I don't get ripped off, you know, when I get the car serviced." And it triggered a poem, and I want to read this poem. It's called "The Dodgy Mechanic."
Okay.
The blonde bimbo took her car in for an oil change and agrees. The mechanic looked at her and thought, "I'll take her money with great ease." He got back to her shortly and said, "Look, your headlight fluid is too low and the flux capacitor for the glove box, why, it doesn't even go. And the drive belt on the ashtray is not working like it should. And the pistons, they keep changing holes. I'll repair that if you could. Look, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll fix it up real nice. I'll even give you free grease and oil as part of the great price." Well, the bimbo looked at him and said, "Why, that's very kindly of you, sir. Give me all that's free. The rest you keep, you greedy cur. I may look pretty dumb and easy to deceive, but I went to university and a doctorate I did receive. Now I'm from the government and I'm here to close you down. Apparently you've been cheating all the women of this town, 'cause honesty and respect is how we treat each other. I guess the motto is, don't judge a book then by its cover."
Ah, excellent. Good stuff, Rod. Oh, just thinking of all the blonde listeners we have tonight. I hope they enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Now, there's one particular one that I enjoyed that I'll ask you to read if you got that one there. It was the one about the internet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that, you know, you read about people who get scams, don't you?
This one here.
Yeah, people read about scams. It just never happened to me, but I couldn't help but smile about people who get caught on scams, you know, send some money. So this one here, I just made it up, and it's called "I Met Her on the Internet."
Yeah.
"It was on the internet when an email came to me from a woman in Nigeria who said her love was there to see. The image was of Sher sitting on a US Navy gun. She asked me for my photo. She said it would be fun. So I sent a snap of Bradley Pitt and said that it was I. She said she needed money and $1,000 was a cry. So I said then, look, why don't you give... So I said then, why don't you give me your account? She said another grand or two would be the best amount. Oh, I really love you, Bradley. were the words she said. Please send some extra money because my grandma now is dead. I don't think this was a scam. She said that it was all legit. Women never lie. Well, she told me that a fair bit. So I'll tell you what I did. I posted her the money taken from a Monopoly game because it seemed a little bit too funny. I told her she can exchange it at the nearest bank. Two can play at that game. Let's keep the whole thing frank.
Now, you said that one was made up, but I think the other ones were true.
Yeah, the one at the restaurant was true, and the one about the car being repaired was an incident where someone spoke to me about. So I get an idea and then, or a seed thought, and then from that I'll write a poem. I try to write the poems humorously or with, you know, some sort of ideal. Christian principles come in to it too. So I try to write about that if it's applicable. And a lot of poems are written out of pain.
Mm.
So it just depends where you come from. My original poem, whoever wrote the first one, was about pain.
Yep.
From when my wife died, and it was struggling with it. But I never ever thought it would be published.
Mm.
And then I wrote another one and another one, and for me it was therapeutic. And after a while, I ended up with enough to write a book. Never thought there was going to be more than one book, but I've now done seven.
That's wonderful. So yes, there's volumes 1 to 7. And we actually have 10 of them to give away.
Yeah, the latest volume has just been finished. It's called The Path Less Travelled, and I brought 10 to give away to anybody who's listening to this radio station.
Oh, good.
So however you do that.
Well, what I'll do is if you go on the planetaudio.org.nz/bookchooks link, there, or you can go on Facebook, search for Book Chooks on there. I will post up how you can win copies. We also have a Goodreads page on there for anyone who's online and joined Goodreads. You can enter the draw there. So, yeah, you'll win a copy of The Path Less Travelled, and it's got a beautiful picture of...
That's taken in Mount Aspiring National Park. A friend of mine is a great photographer, and I was saying I wanted a cover photo.
Yeah.
And he gave me this awesome photo, and I've had it published and put on there. So the picture there was taken in Mount Aspiring National Park down the South Island.
Mm. So have you been there?
No, I haven't been to that place. Some of the photos on the covers are my photos, but I'm not a good photographer.
Yeah.
And so as I'm getting more experience in publishing, because I self-publish and I like to get better quality photos.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, it's so, you know, aspiring.
Yeah. Well, yeah, New Zealand's got lots of natural beauty everywhere you go, and especially if you drive down the South Island, you nearly crash a car every time you go around a corner because you look out the window and say, wow, look at that scene, it's fantastic.
Mm. Now, Rod, are you a reader? Do you like, what have you been reading lately?
Yeah, I love reading, I really do. Books are great, and I think if you can encourage, I always encourage my grandchildren to read books too. And I like to read them stories, you know, at night time. But I picked up a couple of books from, you know, like the hospice shops. And I was browsing through one, and there's one called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is a well-known book, but I'd never actually read it. And it talks about understanding how finances work for the average person. And it's good. It's fresh and it's sort of different. So it's a great read if you're looking at understanding how the financial system operates and how it applies to you in your everyday life.
Okay, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
By?
It's a American guy with a Japanese name.
What's Robert?
Yeah, Robert Kiyosaki, I think.
Kiyosaki.
But it's a great book. He's written a few books. He's got another one he released a couple of years ago in the forwards by Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Yeah, he wrote the forward.
I know Donald Trump has written a few books in his time, but I haven't been reading any of his books.
No, I haven't read any of his either.
All right. So, Rod, I see you're flicking through your books and you found another poem you'd like to read?
Yeah, this one came about, I was up, had to buy a new telephone because the darn things keep, you know, breaking down. You got to upgrade them and the batteries go flat. So I walked into the phone shop and I bought a new smartphone. And when I was driving home, I thought, there's got to be a poem in this.
Okay.
So I'm going to read this one. It's called My New Phone. Well, it was the latest smartphone that I purchased new. It held all the knowledge about things I never knew. Favourite songs from radio, I could play much more and download lots of other stuff from the phone's app store. The GPS could tell me how to get from A to B and I could download movies and my emails I could see. Of course, it takes photos to send to all my friends and even has a deep sea diving help if I should get the bends. Why, there's nothing it can't do. It's so very nice, as long as I keep paying the monthly charged out price. I pay for internet and data and text messages and all. That phone, my dear friend, is more than just phone calls. But here's the thing I struggle with when I'm down on my knees. It doesn't care how I feel. The time I lost my car and office keys, and it won't come and play with me like a dog or cat. It's very antisocial, and I'm sure of that. Now, people walking down the street, looking at their phone, even texting relatives within the family home. It seems we have now come to where we rarely talk to others face to face within our daily walk. We need each other more than we need our phone. Human nature is such we are not meant to live alone. So use your phone and enjoy it, but value people more and life will be much brighter. Of that, I'm fairly sure.
I like that one. Yeah. I'm just thinking about your poetry and how it's light, but there's also a sort of faith component to that. And I was reading one I mentioned in a previous session, a book called The Kiwi Bible. And I didn't have it here, but I did have an extract that maybe you can read that little story, because the thing with The Kiwi Bible is it's not translating, but paraphrasing it into the Kiwi language. So it'll be interesting to hear that one toward...
Yeah, it's about from Mark 4:35. I'll read it.
Read it out.
Funny about the Kiwi Bible, in the church I go to, a lady just brought a new Bible and she didn't have a Bible at all, and she went out and she brought the Kiwi Bible and she absolutely loves it. So this is an extract from the Kiwi Bible. It's taken from Mark chapter 4:35-41, and it's called One Hell of a Storm. Days over, nights here. Jesus says to his mates, "Hey guys, let's go across the other side, eh?" So they took off, leaving the crowd in their wake and with the odd observer boat tagging along. They were out in the middle when one hell of a storm hit them, water everywhere and seemingly forgetting what side of the boat he was supposed to be on. Talk about sink. Man, they were that close. And while this went on, Jesus, believe it or not, was having a bit of a kip down the back. Well, his mates didn't think too much of that and shook him awake. "Listen, boss," they said, "we're about to drown and you give all the appearance of not giving us stuff." Jesus was rather unimpressed with that remark and equally unimpressed with the weather. He got up, turned to face the elements and quite simply said, "Shut up." And just like that, the wind did shut up. End of story. Turning to his mates, he said, "Well, lads, now what do you say? Still don't trust me?" That sort of freaked out a lot. Good grief, they blurted out, "What on earth is this guy? He tells the wind and the waves and stuff what to do." And they do it. So that's a Kiwi Bible.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's an Aussie Bible.
Yeah, there is. There is an Aussie Bible. And it uses all lingo, you know, talking about, you know, yeah, it's the same sort of thing. Talk about koala bears and stuff like that. But the principles come out, and that's what's really interesting, even with poetry or storytelling. If it brings a principle out, then that's really what counts, and we've got to make it relevant to today's society.
Okay. Yeah. I have a book here, also was mentioned in a previous one, that I didn't really get to expand on, and it's called Tales of a Jailhouse Librarian. It's by Mary Beth Z-Man. It's an American book, and she was working in the American justice system. The subtitle is called Challenging the Juvenile Justice System One Book at a Time. And I don't know if people are that familiar with the prison system here, but there are libraries in prison. And it might be that people in jail have never had the opportunity to pick up a book before.
Mm.
So I read this book, and it talks all about how she got this job in the prison, and she became the librarian there. And I don't know, it was inspiring because working in the prison is hard yard.
Mm.
And a book can really change someone's life because it can be inspiring.
That's right.
Yeah. So maybe I just wanted to share a little bit from it with you. So this lady wrote a prologue. Sorry, Mary Beth. And here we go. I had a new job to do and I didn't have a clue. I had left a high school full of cheerleaders and pep rallies and yearbook photos and entered into a world filled with unkempt boys dressed in orange uniforms and assigned long numbers alongside their names. I knew how to teach English, I knew how to teach social studies, I knew how to teach students to write, but I didn't know how to help students cope with jail or fear or life, all real subjects here. Troubled boys with really desperate needs. I understood their chaos and pain and confusion. I had lived some of it, life experience. I had lots of it, so did they. That's all I had to give. And I'll just skip to down here where she goes. One of my students asked for a book, then another one. They complained of being bored and have nothing else to do. I listened to student after student, boy by boy, tell me about the books they like or wish they could read while they are stuck in their cells. While they are stuck in the most boring place on the planet, those books spoke volumes about them. But those books spoke volumes to me when I listened. They reminded me of my passion for books, which had prompted my going to school only 4 years before. That my master's in library science, tucked in a drawer, unused because of the economy and shortage of jobs, didn't have to be reserved for a so-called second career, now deferred, life experience. I started to get the books they love, and they started to read them, and I figured out a way to do my counselling. Well, to make a connection, I needed to counsel. Call it grace. Once I did, it became so simple. The inscription over the library at Thebes, medicine for the soul. We all understand it as a place of escape. Each and every book, an opportunity for escape. To be freed from boredom and tedium that are an inmate's daily companion. To be healed, to be comforted, to be inspired. A lot of the time, I wonder how I ended up in jail, just as my students do. A lot of them tell me they know God had a reason. This is a tough place for God to put a 17-year-old, but I know God had a reason for putting me here, pure grace, to let me see just how big hope can be when it rekindles its flame. My title? Transitional Counselor. My blessing? Jailhouse Librarian.
Wow, that's awesome, isn't it? And I think books, we all need books are in our challenges our thinking process, and especially people who are in jail, because they're in jail for reasons, often not always their own mistake or their lack of education and knowledge.
Mm.
Knowledge is power. If you know something, it can help you through life.
Yes.
And reading good books, self-help books, even the Bible, you know, they're all there to help us along in life. And I just think so encourage people, if you're not a reader or you know, try and get into it because it opens you up. Once you get excited in a field, then you actually want to absorb more knowledge and you need to be able to read to do that.
The more you read, the more you know.
Yeah, that's right. And the more it gets exciting, you want to know more.
And you can share with others. You can read out loud and they can hear. And
that's right.
It's enjoyable to read, especially poetry. It's like short and it rhymes and
I know with one of my grandchildren, he wasn't a good reader and he just didn't like it. So what I did was I reckon was to find subjects that he was interested in. Once he found subjects he was interested in, read him stories like that, he wanted to read and find out more himself, and that got him interested. Once he got the spark came alive, then reading has taken off, and the key was to reading to him at night in bed on subjects that he was interested in.
Mm. Did you read to your children when they were little?
Yeah, always did. And all my kids are avid readers. So they all have lots and lots of books. And the children's house are books everywhere. And I think I've encouraged it right from the start. If it's the one thing I can give to my kids is a thirst for knowledge and a desire to read. And they've all got library cards and they're all...
Oh, great.
They absolutely love reading, which is great.
And then once you start reading a lot of books, you might want to write some books too.
That's right. Yeah, you can. And just in New Zealand, we have like the Christian writers and they're great as a body of people to help you with your writing and so forth. So you get good critique, you know, to help you fine-tune your skills.
Okay. Right. How long have you been a member of... the Christian writers?
I've only been a member 4 years, but we meet once a month, and they meet once a month in the towns. But it's great. I absolutely love getting together with fellow writers, and they've all got different strengths, and you can draw from that and always go away learning something.
That's wonderful. So, Rod, you've got one more poem there you'd like to share. Let's hear it.
Okay, I'll read the last one more poem. This one's based on evolution, and I took some kids to the museum, a busload of kids, and I was looking at all the fossils and stuff, and it got me thinking about evolution. So this poem is called that, simply Evolution. They told me a microbe had crawled out from the sea and turned into a monkey that swings from tree to tree. Eventually he got tired of that and he hatched a cunning plan to walk around this earth and to call himself a man. It seems we've come a long way from being just an eel. We think we are important, and that's just how we feel. Yes, we are proud of what we have evolved to be, for I've now become first cousin to the chimpanzee. Now to survive, man thought he should grow a bigger brain, learn how to make a fire, build a house and drive a train. Then he realised on this globe we need more room. Let's build a rocket to other planets, let us zoom. To climb the corporate ladder, we cheat, we lie or steal. Be cutthroat in business and don't care how you feel. A fast-paced treadmill for the entire human race. No need for sympathy, no need to show you grace. Sometimes there's a tragedy, sometimes we don't win. Of course there is no God, so let's blame it all on him. Surely there's no creator way out there in space, and surely that same God I will never have to face. Now in the museum, they have fossils labelled from A to Z, but never a missing link that connects them all to me. If you believe in evolution, that all of life is fate, well, all I can say then is, well, good luck on that one, mate.
Thank you so much, Rod. This has been your librarian, Selena. Until next Sunday, happy reading, everyone. Bye for now.